We're doing Parshat Vayishlach. We'll do a quick overview of the parasha. The parasha begins with Yaakov sending angels or messengers to his brother Esav, saying, "Hey, I'm coming back. I've been detained. I just want to find favor in your eyes." And the messengers come back and say, "Yeah, he's preparing for war. He's ready to kill you." Yaakov's very concerned. He prepares in three fronts. He prepares gifts for Esav. He prepares for war with Esav. And he prays. And he asks Hashem to protect him. And he tries to escape. That night before the war, he tries to run away. He transfers his whole family. And then he goes back for a few more things. He goes back alone. And he meets up with this stranger, which we have on tradition is an angel. And he fights with him throughout the night. And neither side can win, and neither side is letting up until the angel finally says, "Let me go, it's the morning." Yaakov says, "No, you bless me." So he says, "Okay, what's your name?" "Yaakov." "Okay, your name is going to be Yisrael, because you've overcome the powerful ones and people, you're successful." And that's, we'll still discuss that. And now Yaakov's limping after the war, and he has to go limping, he has to go to meet his brother. He looks up and he sees Esav with 400 men. He divides the children and he runs forward and bows to Esav and all the mothers and their children bow. And Esav charges him. He runs at him and kisses him. And they both cry. And Esav asks, "Who's all this?" And Yaakov says, "The family I've been blessed with." Esav says, "What's with all the gifts?" Yaakov says, "It's for you. I want to find favor in your eyes." Esav says, I am so wealthy. I don't need all that." Yaakov says, "I have everything I need. It's for you." And Esav takes it. Esav says, "Okay, let's travel together." Yaakov says, "We're too slow. We're a family. It's not healthy. We can't do that." Esav says, "Okay, I'll leave you some of my men to take care of you as you go." Yaakov says, "Why bother? Go ahead." And Esav leaves. And Yaakov continues traveling peacefully. He comes to the city of Shechem. He said he purchases a plot of land, and he sets up an academy there. His daughter goes out. She's abducted by Shechem. He sleeps with her forcibly. He comes to Yaakov and says, he sends his dad, Hamor, to bargain, and he wants to purchase Dina as a wife. The brothers who hear this are very upset. They come back and they answer with cunning. They say, "We can't do that. You know, you guys are uncircumcised. If the city circumcises, we can talk." So they convince everyone to circumcise. 3 days after the circumcision, everyone's lying in bed, moaning in pain and can't move. And the two brothers, Shimon and Levi, come in and kill everyone in the city. And they didn't tell Yaakov. The rest of the family comes in and takes all the loot. They capture everything the city has. And Yaakov says, "What'd you do? They had peace treaties with other cities. Now other cities are going to come and attack us. How are we going to stand up to all that?" And they say, "Well, are we going to let him get away with treating our sister like that?" So God tells Yaakov, "You made a promise. Go fulfill your promise." And God blesses him that the nations don't chase him. And Yaakov tells the people, "Cleanse yourself." So they get rid of all the idols they collected among the loot, and they travel. Now, one of the things that happens is Rachel dies as she's giving birth. She has the son Benjamin. And after Rachel dies, Yaakov makes his prime tent with her servant. And Reuven is very upset with that. He takes Yaakov's bed and shifts it to his mom's tent, to Leah. The Torah describes it in harsh terms. Our tradition is that that's what happened. Yaakov is upset at Reuven, and Reuven will lose his rights for the leadership of the Jewish people because of that, because he got involved in something he shouldn't have gotten involved. And the parsha concludes with the genealogy of Esav. That's the conclusion of our parsha. So let's begin our parsha again. We have to be concerned in life. Ramchal says one of the things you have to be concerned about is concern. He says sometimes we are too concerned, and we have to be concerned. We shouldn't be too concerned, because that in and of itself can destroy a person. Chazal say, "Machzik bozne kelev." Sometimes you want to get by. You don't want the dog to bite you, so you grab his ears. Well, you know what? Now he's for sure going to charge you. So sometimes people do that. My kids have, on the way home from shul, there's a dog. They're always scared he's going to attack them. So they always walk up to the gate to look, to make sure he's not coming. You know, when they look, so the dog comes. What are you doing? Right? So Chazal say, this is a weakness that we often have. We arouse the trouble. By trying to preclude it, we arouse it. So Yaakov wants to come back to Israel. He could have come back peacefully. Everything could have gone by beautifully. Instead, he sends word today. He says, hey, I hope you're happy. I hope everything's okay. You know, it's been 20 years. I've been gone. Esav says, oh, great idea. Takes his men and charges. Chazal say, what are you doing? Machzik bosnei chelev. You're grabbing the dog's ears. Over mitaber al riv lolo. Sometimes you walk by a fight. It has nothing to do with you. I was once walking in the street and I see two people, grown men, pulling at a bag. And one's literally trying to bite the other's hand to let go of the bag. And you see two grown men fighting. And someone says, come, help me. You know, as though to protect the one who's right. And I said, I don't know who's right. What am I going to get involved? I'm going to get socked in the face. I don't even know who to side with. Right? What am I supposed to do? Whoever's going to grab the bag is going to run. And I don't know who should have the bag. I never met these two fellows. So I'm sorry to see two guys fighting, but I can't get involved. What am I going to do? So sometimes the best thing is don't get involved. You can't do anything. You can't do anything right, or you can't know you're doing right. So the messengers come back to Yaakov and they tell him he's coming with 400 generals and each one has their army. And Yaakov is very concerned. He says, oh boy, all these years Esav's been serving Dad. He has the mitzvah of Kibbutz Av'im. I have the sin that I haven't been doing Kibbutz Av'im. I have to stand up to him. How am I going to do that? And Yaakov teaches us many lessons in this week's parasha. Chazal tell us, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Lebanim, that the things, the occurrences of the patriarchs are siman, in other words, they sign in our future. There's a repetition of history. What transpires with Yaakov will transpire with Yosef. What transpired with Avram transpired with Yitzchak. You see that Yitzchak redigs the wells. You see Yitzchak's wife is threatened to be abducted. You see that Yaakov goes down to Egypt just like Avram went down to Egypt. History repeats itself. And Chazal sought that in certain actions our sages sealed our future. Siman lebanim. It's a starting point for the children. It's as though certain dots have been plotted in our history. So we want to know how to deal with them. We have to look back to the Avot. And so Chazal tell us that when Rebbe or other sages in the days of the Tanoic period and later would have to go meet with the Roman Senate, they would sit down and learn this Parsha. Parsha Vayishlach teaches us how to deal with Rome, how to deal with Esav. You got to deal with a gift. Jews until this half a century always knew that if you want to go down a slide and you want it to be smooth, you smear it. You guys understand? You know what the smear means?
Lubricate. Yeah. Please.
You lubricate, right? Okay, you want to go down the slide smoothly. So Jews always knew that any path you wanted to cross, it's just a question of how much you smear it. You smear it right, you got in.
So
it's like, what?
Right. It's still right to do it that way.
Right.
But initially, you're saying it sort of was a criticism. The implication
right.
was he could have gone in quiet.
Right.
And he would have let my God speak my God.
Right.
But it doesn't seem that way.
Machlokas. It's a machlokas in the Medrash. So I'm presenting both sides. Was Yaakov right or was Yaakov wrong? So we take both lessons. Okay. We say, don't stir up trouble. On the other hand, you got to know how to smear trouble away.
He's going to come at you and you make your calculation as you did, that he's not going to be able to just go peaceably. Let me try and appease him, smear him, but also keep some back for war, supposedly. But I didn't know. There was also criticism that said he took a needless risk.
So Chazal say that we learn many things from Yaakov about how to deal with Rome. One of the things we learn is that, you know, what I'm about to quote you is interesting. A few years ago, I read an interview with an ambassador, one of the former ambassadors to the United States, one of Israel's ambassadors to the United States. And this person is not a Torah observant Jew. And I don't want to say his name, but he used the exact words of Chazal. He said, our history of the United States is that they sometimes come to meetings and they're so warm and friendly, like they're our best friend. And then sometimes we come to meetings and they talk to us like we're complete strangers, like what do we want from them? We're two separate nations and they turn their backs on us. Those of you who know, or who have studied a little bit, the Yom Kippur War and how we captured Sinai and how day after day, you could just look at the chronicles of the New York Times, how the U.S. kept promising they're going to show up and they never sent the troops. They kept saying, we're sending troops. They didn't want us to capture the Suez Canal. They didn't want us to succeed as much as we did. They never dreamt we would. And they kept saying, they're sending in men, we should stop. And our generals kept being cornered and winning and advancing by force. And this has been our history time and again, where they made promises and they didn't fill in. So, on the other hand, they did supply the ammunition. I mean, you got to call a spade a spade.
Well, not exactly.
Golda Meir said...
They already crossed the canal.
Okay.
The Rome was already across the Suez Canal.
That's true. Canal. Okay, but back to our story. So, Chazal say this is what we see with Yaakov. Here he has a moment where Esav loves him and hugs him and kisses him and says, let me help you, let me leave my men with you. But 5 minutes later, he was ready to kill him. Right? That's how it's been with Rome. You know, the Talmud says they once made a decree against us, and so the Jews made a hafgana. That's the term in the Talmud. They made a protest. A Roman woman gave them advice. She said, go in the streets and say, aren't we all brothers? Aren't we all descendants of man? So they did that. And the Romans said, hey, they got a point. We're all human beings. And they annulled the decree. So sometimes this humanistic approach works with Rome. And sometimes not. Back to our story. So Yaakov prepares. And from Yaakov we learn that it's important to deal with life. People like to mislead themselves and think that being religious means being lazy. Oh, they don't say that. They say being religious, you have faith in God, everything will work out. They don't call it lazy. I call it lazy. Have faith in God and work. The two go in unison, and that's part of what Yaakov teaches us. He works day and night in hot and cold. He has faith, and yet he works. He has faith, and yet he prepares for war. He has faith, and yet he prepares with gifts. Yaakov teaches us there's a balance. Having faith includes doing my end of the deal. I've got to function as best as I can and at the same time realize that it's in God's hands. There's a duality. We have to function with that. King David has faith, yet he runs. He prepares with armor. He prepares tactics and routes of escape. Yeah, faith doesn't contradict doing my end of it. On the contrary, there's a balance. And we have to maintain that balance. Yes.
We also see evidence with Yaakov of what happens when you have faith and you don't do the work. Like when you didn't come back straight to Bethel. And then it's not doing the work and then you have the consequences of it.
Okay, you fair? Yaakov says, I know you promised me everything's going to be okay, but maybe you've given me so much that I don't have a right to get by this time. Maybe I've used up all my merits. Katonti, I've been diminished. Mikol ha-chasadim u-mikol ha-emet. You've done so much on my behalf. We look at Yaakov and we say, he's done so much for God. So many years being a faithful servant. So many years being honest. God, it must have been so hard for him. Doesn't he deserve merits for that? That's the difference between us and tzaddikim. Tzaddikim look at the world and they say, God's given me so much. We stub our toe and we say, Ribono Shalom, what did I do to deserve this? Come on, I've been working so hard. We value what we've done and we undervalue what we receive. And tzaddikim know how to look at the world and they say, God's given me so much. It's a challenge. We come to davening and we feel like we deserve. We have a right to make requests. And on the contrary, when we don't get what we want, we feel like we have a claim against God. Why am I not getting it? But I want it. And I think I deserve it. Yaakov Avinu says, I don't deserve this. I know. You've given me so much. Given me so much. God, where were you? They gave me the wrong wife. That's called giving me so much. Ribono Shel Olam. My wives were barren. I had fights with my kids. I spent night and day working like a dog. Where were you? Now, isn't that the way we think? Yaakov has his father-in-law trying to kill him. Ribono Shel Olam. Look at what I have to put up with. What kind of father-in-law? What kind of brothers-in-law? They try to take everything he owns. No, Yaakov says, Ribono Shel Olam, you've given me so much. I don't know if I have a right to get any more. Help me out, even though I'm not sure I have a right to anything at this point in my life, after all the blessings you've given me. That's Yaakov. That's greatness. We live a life which is less happy than it can be because we lack appreciation. And if we lack appreciation, then we're pretty upset at what we don't have. if we'd have appreciation, we'd be much happier waking up in the morning. We'd see the good things in life. This is such an important point. I want to take 3 minutes just to elaborate on this. The following tool that we're going to discuss now is a tool that can be used throughout your life. It has specific applications within marriage. This isn't the proper setting to elaborate on that. After you get married, get back to me. Because if you know how to apply this, then your married life can look much better. But I can't discuss it with bachelors. So the tool we'll discuss now, the applications come back when you're married. You're sitting here, and does any of you hear that clock ticking back there?
Sometimes. I heard that car horn.
You heard the car horn?
Yeah.
Let me ask you, the pinky toe on your right leg, now you can sense it. Did you sense it a minute ago?
No.
The back of your neck, did you sense it a minute ago? What about your chin? You know, if someone starts scratching their chin, everyone else does. What about your eyebrow? We have thousands of senses, sensory stimuli, every given second. And we choose somewhere around 7 or 8 that we concentrate on. You can focus on what you're hearing, on what you're seeing to some degree. Even what you're hearing, you filter. Even what you're seeing, you filter. If a person starts registering more than that, they can go crazy. But this tool can be used, meaning a person can choose which sense he focuses on. So let's say you're standing at the end of Yom Kippur, and you have a sensation of hunger. So you tell yourself, that's because I'm hungry. But then you come home, and you're about to eat, and you suddenly hear the car screeching outside. And you run outside, and you see an accident, and you run and you deal with it, and 3 hours later, you remember you haven't eaten. I was on my way home, Matzei Tisha B'Av. That's a harder fast than Yom Kippur. And I see an ambulance next to a friend of mine's house. Turns out his father died. So I went in and I was with him for the next hour and a half, 2 hours, with him and the body, helping him set up the Chevra Kadisha. 2 hours after Tisha B'Av, I get my first drink. Now, if you would have spoken to me an hour earlier, I could have explained to you how thirsty I was. But somehow after Tisha B'Av, for 2 hours, I'm not thinking about my thirst. I'm focused on something else. We choose what senses we focus on. If we'd be focused on certain things, then we wouldn't notice other things. The Rebbe of Chabad once had important meetings after Yom Kippur. He only broke his fast at midnight. He kept dealing with Jews who had situations that had to be dealt with on the moment. Midnight, Motzei Yom Kippur, he broke his fast. Okay? But we can do it too. We choose what we focus on. And even something annoying can be overcome if you focus on something else. So this can really be applied. If you only think what sense you focus on. So you walk into the shower, and your mind is on a million other things. You sit down and eat chocolate, and your mind is on a million other things. You can polish off a whole pack, you have no clue what you ate. Then you sit down and you peck at the little crumbs that are left, and they're so delicious. What about the whole pack? It didn't exist, you weren't focused. Meaning our senses, we have a choice. Take a Shabbos meal and sit down and take the first bite of cholent and think, I'm going to enjoy this, lichvod Shabbos. It will taste different than the rest of the cholent. We have a choice where we focus our senses. And if a person is constantly perturbed, so then he is investing many energies in being upset. That scowl, the frown, that feeling of, I can't stand it. You could sit there in shul and every minute can be painful. I was in the middle of an important meeting this afternoon, and it came mincha time. Now, this is a person who is here for about 4 hours. They flew in, they're flying out. I needed to talk to the person. So now I'm going to mincha, and every second is torture, right? Because I know I have a limited time, I'm going to have to be here for class at 6:45. I have very limited time with this person, and every minute of mincha is taken from the time I could be meeting with this person. So, I daven my Shmoneh Esrei, and I'm waiting for Chazaras HaShatz, right? And just my luck, the Chazan is one of these Jews that davens real slow. Okay, so you're standing there, and the first minute I'm telling myself, halachically, should I stay or leave? Meaning, I'm trying to calculate what I'm supposed to do at this moment. And I decided I should stay, in spite of the time constraint. So the next minute, I'm really suffering as he goes through Avo slowly and Kedusha slowly. And then it struck me, he's davening with real kavana. How often do you hear that? A chazan that's really thinking about what he's saying, word by word. I said to myself, enjoy. When do you get this? You're going to be here anyways. Focus, learn from his kavana. Learn what it is to daven like a mensch. So I stood there and I forced myself to focus on something else. I'm going to be here anyways. How many times do we spend time in shul and we're focused on how upset we are, how annoyed we are, how much we want to leave, how pressured we are? Am I going to make the bus? You're not doing anything productive, but you are doing something destructive. When we focus on negative emotions, we are festering those emotions. Yaakov Avinu lives life where he focuses on the good in life. Look at the blessings I have. I was once a guest by a woman who grew up as an orphan, and she told us in the orphanage she never had hot water. She said, you know what beautiful thing, you know how gorgeous a hot shower, a hot bath? There's probably nothing sweeter in life than a hot bath. Ever since I heard that line, I suddenly look at a hot shower differently. Oh, don't get me wrong, I didn't always have hot water. I also went to yeshiva. I know what it's like to shower in cold water. But I never thought of it that way. When I didn't have it, it was a nuisance. When I did have it, no, obviously I have it, right? We grew up with that. Isn't that the way it should be? No, if you stop and think about it, then you can enjoy it. Again, we can enjoy life much more if we choose to focus on the pleasure and we don't take it for granted. Two ways of walking through life. Most of us walk through life where all the pleasures are given. Why shouldn't I have A, B, C, D, E, F, G? That's a given. When we lack it, then we're upset. Yaakov Avinu walks through life and every second is a second of thanks. And you're going to see this as a recurring theme. We'll see it about Moshe Rabbeinu as well. But the reason I'm detaining on this point, because I think this is a point that if a person thinks about, can be life-altering. It could change every day into a far more beautiful day. We can focus our senses. We can focus our attitude. Back to our story. So Yaakov Avinu says, God, I came over here. I had only a stick. So what would we say? God, you turned on me when I came here. I came here. I had so much money. And my nephew came and robbed me blind. And where were you? No, Yaakov doesn't say that. Yaakov says, I had nothing but a stick. And look at how well off I am now. Perspective. Please, can you save me from my brother, from Esav? He is a threat when he comes as my brother and says, I want to be close to you. He is a threat when he comes as the enemy, Esav. One of the mistakes we make is that we assume that if someone evil is nice to us, it's good for us. Yaakov Avinu says, save me from his hands if he comes nicely. Save me from his hand if he comes like Esav. I'm scared. You promised me that I would live. I know I'm going to live. He never promised me my wife and kids would live. Yaakov Avinu prepares jewels for Esav. He prepares a special hawk that Esav can take with him when he's hunting. He prepares the servants how they should greet Esav. They should tell Esav, yeah, Yaakov's coming up in the rear. Because the way a noble would behave is he'd be in front of all his men. Yaakov's walking behind all his men to indicate, I'm not a big boss, Esav. All of these are gifts for you. And everyone's going forward and saying, Yaakov's leading up the way in the back. What they don't know is that in the middle of the night, Yaakov is planning on running away and not being behind all of them. So all of them are coming and telling Esav, Yaakov's following up. Yaakov's coming up. And then Yaakov takes the family and tries to transfer them. Goes back for a few small vessels that he left behind. Tzadikim, because they earn their money honestly, treasure their money. We are willing to forgo our money because we know that money is easy come in many ways. Money is easy come when we're easy about the laws, when we're lax about being honest. If a person is meticulously honest, then it's much harder for money to come. And then a person is more careful about where he spends. So Yaakov goes back to take the last few vessels that he left behind. And the angel of Esav shows up. And the angel of Esav has come to take Yaakov down before he meets up with Esav. And they're fighting. And so the angel of Esav has claims, you thief, you rotten liar, look at what you did to me. And Yaakov says, no, I bought the rights to the firstborn. And they're fighting throughout the night. There's this fight. Until finally in the morning he says, okay, let me go. Yaakov says, we're not done yet. He says, no, I'm done. Yaakov says, I'm not done. He says, okay, what do you want? He says, give in. You came for this argument. You concede that I'm right. And the angel says, okay, you're right, you won. And that's what we read in the prophet, and that's what Yaakov wins the battle. The idea is that until that moment, Yaakov, and that's what the name connotes, Yaakov has to do things in a twisted way. He doesn't face off. Now Yaakov becomes Yisrael, the one who is victorious facing off. We have a tradition that's actually written overtly in Daniel that prior to every war on earth, there is a war in heaven. Before any nations fight, their angels have it out in heaven, and depending on how it plays out in heaven, that defines what happens down below. So Yaakov already took down Esav's angel. So now taking down Esav is nothing. He's already won the war. And so Yaakov is now limping as he advances towards Esav. The sun rises for Yaakov. He's limping. And Esav's coming with his 400 men. Yaakov divides everyone and he tells the children, listen here, you're all wearing your Shabbos clothes, your nice white clothing on the outside. Underneath you prepare your weapons. If he charges with his weapons drawn, you draw yours. If he comes for peace, we'll accept him with peace. Yaakov advances and bows towards Esav. And because he bowed, that's why he was subservient. This goes back to the Medrash we discussed last week, that God keeps telling Yaakov, stand erect. Yaakov tells him, stand up to Esav. God tells Yaakov, stand up to Esav, and Yaakov does not. That's one Medrash. Another Medrash says the exact opposite theme. The other Medrash says that from Yaakov we learn that when Esav is in power, we shmir him. We put our head down. And that's why Rebbe, when he would send official letters to Antoninus, the Roman emperor, he would write, from your servant Rebbe to King Antoninus. He would greet him with terms of praise. He would put his head down, because right now they're the boss, so have respect for them. And Esav charges him. And here we have different opinions among our sages. What was Esav thinking to do? Esav bares his teeth and he kisses him. And one opinion says he wanted to do like a vampire. He wanted to kill him with his teeth on the spot. That deserves broader discussion. Why did he want to kill him that way? And the other opinion is that this was the one time in his life that he actually felt for his brother and he kissed him. And he asked him, who are all of these? And Yaakov says, these are the kids God granted me. What about the wives? Out of modesty, he doesn't address the wives. He doesn't speak about it. One of the things we have to learn in life is how to be modest. People sometimes will call and say, send regards to your wife. No, we're not supposed to send regards from a guy to my wife. Your wife can send regards to my wife.
To the family.
Right, to the family, right. Right. You send regards to the family. But a direct relationship, whose wife is she? What's going on here? So Yaakov doesn't address that. Esav is looking at all the women and all the kids and says, who are all of these? And Yaakov answers, these are all my kids. They go to bow. So when Leah bows, her children bow. But when the maids bow, their kids look at their mom and they say, we're Yaakov's kids. We don't bow. And they don't bow. And very often, when a person has a complex, when they really feel like there's something wrong with them, that's when they are more arrogant. Very often, arrogance stems from weakness. If a person's confident, he has no problem putting his head down. He knows who he is. So Leah's children, they have no problem bowing. Rachel's children, they have no problem bowing. Bilhah and Zilpah's kids, I'm not bowing. Who am I going to bow? But Yaakov bowed. Your own father bowed. Leah bowed. Rachel bowed. Their kids bowed. Yaakov bowed. but not Vilen Zilpah's kids. That's one medrash, because the pasuk doesn't overtly say that they bowed. Another medrash says everyone bowed, and they were all wrong for bowing. This medrash says that that's why the temple was built in the tribe of Benjamin. The Holy of Holies was in the tribe of Benjamin, because Benjamin never bowed to Esav. He wasn't born yet. Every other one bowed to Esav, so they didn't merit to have the Holy of Holies in their section.
First, right?
So we said that that was held against him. Yaakov bowed first. One opinion this way, one opinion that way.
Secure, you bowed. Yeah, but then we...
Okay. Two opinions. Okay. No, we got 2 minutes, sorry. Yaakov makes it out in peace. And it says he purchased a piece of land. And our sages say, Vayavo Yaakov Shalem Ir Shechem, Vayichan Espenei Ha'ir. One understanding is he camped opposite the city, but the word Vayichan, our sages understood, means he imparted chen, he imparted charm to the city. What does that mean? So one opinion says they didn't have a normal economy, they were only bartering. He established a currency. And we have a discussion, the Medrash discusses what was the currency that Avram minted, that Yitzchak minted, that Yaakov minted, that Mordechai and Esther minted. Remind me, we'll discuss it.
And that's also what they did. You know, that we'd be in charge of currency for a generation.
Okay. So, yes, Mr. Fisher. And Greenspan. And Bernanke. Yaakov, one opinion is he established a currency. Second opinion is he established infrastructure. They didn't have normal bridges and he set up normal infrastructure. The third opinion is he set up bathhouses. They weren't too clean over there. So he set up normal bathhouses for people to bathe. A fourth opinion is he set up boundaries for his family. Now as a family, they need boundaries.
Where are we now? Which areas? Where are we now?
Yaakov's camping opposite Shechem. He made it out of Esav in peace. Chazal say when a person is at a time of danger and he makes it out in peace, he should do something for the betterment of society. We learn it from Yaakov. He came back in peace, so he established something on behalf of society. Different opinions as to what he established. And this brings us to 10 o'clock. We will end class here. Those who want to stick around, we'll do another 10 minutes.